amor, then otra vez ven. Good job. And now we're going to review a song that we started to... Oh, no, we're going to do a whole different thing. We're going to do a parody of this song in a little bit. For those of you who don't know, today is about humor, and you're going to hear more jokes than you care to hear, and all of the hymns are parodies of things, and so we're going to start by actually learning this song. How many folks know Gentle Angry People? Some folks do. Okay, good. All right, so we'll just sing through these two verses. Stay rised as your spirits and bodies allow for stand. Seated.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Joy Heft. Welcome to this place. This is a home where no revealed truths are promoted and no script or human being accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching the truth. But we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and the whole world. We believe in commitment to those ideals, which makes us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you and, in particular, to those who are first-time visitors. We welcome you and especially encourage you to join us after worship for coffee and conversation. Information about the church is available from the new member desk during coffee hour and from any of the other people here gathered. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. If you have children with you, they are invited to attend our religious education program. The children will leave for classes later in the service. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and children. and adults are also encouraged to attend the adult religious education programming each week at 11:50 a.m. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. Okay. And now for announcements. On Easter Sunday at Edwardsville Public Library Bandstand, there will be a sunrise service by Reverend Joseph E. Russo. You can contact him. I have this announcement if you want to contact him about that. On March 20th at 6 p.m., this Friday, the youth group is hosting an all-ages multi-generational dance. Entrance is $5, more if you can, less if you can't. Dress in your favorite decades prom costume. Proceeds go to Camp Fest, and all are welcome. And this is from Sabrina. Nominations are open for the search committee. The search committee is a team of seven people who have the following characteristics from the UUA Settlement Handbook. They're known and respected by others in the congregation, more strongly committed to the congregation as a whole than to any subgroup, well informed about the demands and the time requirements of search committee membership. Members should promise to attend every meeting and to give about 250 to 400 hours over the coming year. Balanced by sex, age, interests, and tenure of membership to reflect the diversity of the congregation. Major areas of church life such as religious education, social action, property management, finance, and music should be representative by participants. Nonpartisans. Balanced by attributes, organizational ability, broad theological awareness, computer skills, not paid members of the church staff, except in the case of a senior minister who will be supervising the minister to be called. Pledged to conduct a search that is fair and non-discriminatory with respect to race, color, disability, sex, sexual orientation, age, and national origin. Commitment to maintain confidentiality and to seek consensus. Capable of both self-assertion and compromise. Not prone to extreme reactions to ministers. The previous minister's strongest supporters or opponents are rarely the best choice. Well suited to teamwork. A search committee is no place for lone rangers. Do you think you know someone who has what it takes and have asked if you can nominate them? Are you someone who would like to be in the committee? If so, fill out this form and give it to a board member or Pastor Sunshine. Nominations are open until April 25th. If you have any questions, contact Sabrina. There's also a box out in the worker room that has these, so you can fill those out.
And actually, I'm going to recuse myself from that as it might be considered a conflict of interest, so just give it to the board members. For those of you who may be visitors, I am the interim minister here at First Unitarian Church of Alton. It means I am here just for the 2 years that this congregation is searching for its next settled and called minister. And so if you're wondering, what's a search committee? They are the group that will help determine who the next settled minister is. At 11:50 today, we will be having an adult religious education program called Theater of the Oppressed. Today we're talking about humor and playfulness, and Theater of the Oppressed is a way of using playfulness to do serious work. And so I encourage you to join us for that. It should be a lot of fun, and we'll be meeting in Emerson Place. And that concludes our general announcements. I now invite Ellie Cronwillis to come on up.
Good morning. I'm Kelly Cronwillis, and I currently serve on the board as the past president My family and I have been attending here for about 6 years and really loving this community and involved in a variety of ways. I'm also a member of the Abundant Sunday group who's working on our Abundant Sunday event next week. And as I've been working with the group and thinking about our focus question, you know, I've been thinking really about the underlying meaning of the word worth that's in our focus question. And sometimes worth is very obvious to pinpoint and see, you know, like if you're helping somebody directly, you're maybe providing some goods or some deeds or a listening ear to someone. In those actions and deeds, the worth is very obvious. But sometimes we actually contribute things to the community. It's not quite so obvious. We might just be doing a very small task around the church or around home, or you might be doing something more elaborate like serving on a committee or a board. And this could actually be, you know, like in your workplace or in your city government or here at the church. And so we provide worth in a lot of ways. But what I was really thinking about with the focus question was thinking about how when I contribute things to the community, it actually feeds my own spiritual well-being. And I was thinking about how, like, when I contribute financially, that's kind of behind the scenes. You don't really get to see it work. You don't always get to see all the things that your abundance helps provide our community. But when I really think about it, I think about how, like, what small portion I can give goes into a bigger pool, and then together, collectively, we do more. We maybe, you know, then can pay, cover more of our utilities, or we can cover more outreach, or we can do a lot more because my part maybe gets bigger when it gets given to the whole group and we all work together. So I kind of wanted to encourage everyone to think about our focus question, which is, how does my giving shape things of worth and value? And so as I was thinking about those, I was thinking about how it feeds my spirit. So hopefully everyone can kind of be thinking about that focus question this week and thinking about how their spirit can be fed by that same kind of thinking about how your abundance goes into the bigger pool and gets more power that way. So next Sunday is our Abundance Sunday, which includes a catered meal. And so for the meal, we need to have an accurate reservation count. So if I think we did this last week, I wasn't here, but we passed out reservation cards so that everyone had a chance to sign up and get on the reservation list for our meal that'll be right after first service. So if the ushers have cards, if there's anybody who hasn't signed up yet, please let the ushers know and we'll get your reservation in for next week. And as the ushers are doing that, let me just tell you a little about how next week's going to go. So Reverend Thomas Perchlick of First Church in St. Louis is going to be our guest speaker in the pulpit. And right after first service, we're going to have that catered meal out here in the Crate Worker room. Anybody else need a reservation card? All right, thanks everybody. We'll see you here next week.
Thank you, Kelly. And I do want to add that we will be asking for an estimate of giving next week. We're not doing pledges this year. So it's really thinking about, how is your spiritual life fed by your giving, and what are you creating by that giving? So we definitely encourage you to focus on that important question in the coming week, and we do hope you will join us. The luncheon will just be that, a luncheon, a party, and not much else. And I know we like to hang out with each other, so it should be a lot of fun.
Our call to worship. Laughter is an affirmation of our humanness, a face-saving way to express our anxieties, fears, and other hidden emotions. It breaks the ice, builds trust, and draws us together into a common state of well-being. Laughter is called inner jogging. A robust laugh gives the muscles of the face, shoulders, diaphragm, and abdomen a good workout, and sometimes the arms and legs. Laughter temporarily raises heart rate and blood pressure. Breathing becomes faster, deeper, and oxygen surges through the bloodstream. We become more alive. So sit back and get ready to do some inner jogging as we begin our service. And we begin our service this morning with the prelude. As Ben Heft lights our chalice, please join me in reciting these words. Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. And now stand, if you're willing and able, for our first hymn.
We are a gentle, doubting people.
To this tune of
what we just sang.
What we just sang earlier.
Changed, it's a little brighter in the mornings, but I still have a lot of trouble waking up, particularly on Sunday mornings. Man, it's just rough. And so that is the homage that we give today. Today, I share with you the story. I am not going to get up today. Please let me be, it's by Dr. Seuss. Please let me be, please go away. I am not going to get up today. The alarm can ring, the birds can peep. Oh, my bed is warm, my pillow's deep. Today is the day that I'm going to sleep. I don't care if kids are getting up right now all over town. I'm the kid who isn't getting up. I'm staying down. All around the world, they're getting up, and that's okay with me. Let the kids get up in Switzerland or Memphis, Tennessee. Let the kids get up in Alaska and in China, I don't care. Let the kids get up in Italy and Spain. Let them get up in Massachusetts and Connecticut and Maine. Let the kids get up in London and Paris and Berlin. Let them get up all they want to, but not me. I am sleeping in. See, I've never been so sleepy since I can't remember when. You can take away my breakfast. Give my egg back to the hen. Nobody's gonna get me up no matter what he does. Today is my day for woozy snoozies. You could tip my feet. You can shake my bed. You can pour cold water on my head. But you are wasting your time, so just go away. I am not gonna get up today. In bed is where I'm going to stay, and I don't really care what the neighbors say. I've never really liked them anyway. Let them try to wake me up. Let them scream and yowl and yelp. They can yelp from now till Christmas, but it is not going to help. My bed is warm, my pillow's deep, and today is the day I'm going to sleep. I don't choose to be walking. I don't choose to be talking. The only thing I'm choosing is to lie here woozy snoozing. So won't you just kindly go away? Because I'm really not going to get up today. You won't get me with a strawberry flip. You won't get me up with a marshmallow dip or a pineapple butterscotch ding dang do. My tongue is asleep. My teeth too. You can try with dogs and roosters. You can try with goats and geese. But I'm going to go on snoozing. You can even bring in the police. You can print it in the papers and spread the news all over town. But nothing's going to get me up because I'm staying down. You can shoot me with peas and beans. You can even bring in the United States Marines. You can play the whole thing on TV. But I'm just not going to get up today. Not me. Nothing's gonna get me up. Why can't you understand? You'll only waste your money if you hire that big brass band. So that's why I say, please, please, please go away. I'm just not going to get up today. And the mama says, I guess he really means it. So you can have the egg.
So we begin with some jokes. The children in a Unitarian Universalist religious education class were drawing. The teacher asked one child, "What are you drawing a picture of?" "Well, I'm drawing a picture of God," was the reply. "But nobody knows what God looks like," objected the teacher. "Well, they will when I get my picture done."
A grandmother loved to tell stories of her early church days. She couldn't understand why every Sunday they prayed for the same members of her family and not for any others. The whole church prayed out loud for her dad and her Uncle Arthur and her Aunt Helen. It always went, "Our Father and Art and Helen, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come."
A visitor to a Unitarian Universalist service sat through the minister's sermon with growing incredulity at the heretical ideas being spouted. After the service, a UU asked the visitor, "So how did you like it?" "I can't believe half the things that minister said," sputtered the visitor in outrage. "Oh good, then you'll fit right in."
At a family gathering, a little girl was asked to give thanks before the meal. The family members all bowed their heads in expectation. The girl began her prayer, thanking God for mommy, daddy, brother, sister, grandma, grandpa, and all her aunts and uncles and cousins. Then she began to thank God for the food. She gave thanks for the turkey, the dressing, the fruit salad, the cranberry sauce, the pies, the cakes, and even the Cool Whip. Then she paused, and everybody waited. And waited. After a long silence, she looked up at her mother and asked, "If I thank God for the broccoli, won't he know that I'm lying?"
In the middle of a forest, there was a hiker who was suddenly confronted with a huge, mean bear. Finally, he turned away and started to run as fast as he could, and finally he ended up at the edge of a very steep cliff. His hopes were dim, but he got on his knees, opened his arms, and said, "My God, please give this bear some religion." Then there was a flash of lightning in the air, and the bear stopped just short of the hunter. The bear was puzzled and looked up in the air and said, "My God, thank you for the food that I am about to receive."
What do you get when you cross a Unitarian Universalist with a Mormon? Someone who knocks on your door and asks you what you believe.
And finally, a prayer before we go into our time of meditation and joys and sorrow. The Lord is my programmer. I shall not crash. He installed his software on the hard disk of my heart. All of his commands are user-friendly. He directly guides me to the right choices for his name's sake. Even though I scroll through the problems of life, I will fear no bugs. He is my backup. His password protects me. He prepares a menu before me in the presence of my enemies. His help is only a keystroke away. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and my file will be merged with his and saved forever.
I invite you now to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitude and celebrations you bring with you to the church this morning. There will be a time to share concerns and sorrows in a few minutes.
My husband and I attended a wedding last weekend. While I was at the wedding, I was just thankful for so many different things. But one of the biggest things was the person who got married was a very, very, very good close friend of ours who was in her 70s. And the person she was marrying was technically her brother-in-law. But basically, they had both lost their spouses due to cancer in the last couple of years and had found love, happiness, and joy again at their age with each other. And it was a beautiful wedding. They were both so happy. They looked like teenagers. And it was just a really nice, wonderful experience to see that even that late in life, you can still find love and happiness.
First, I want to express gratitude for everything that we worked on yesterday. Anybody who was here, the process was wonderful. Yes, we gave up Saturday, but I just feel so much more connected to everything here at church after yesterday. It was awesome. And a huge, huge thank you to Kathleen for all of the food. We couldn't have worked as hard as we did without the sustenance that we gained from your delicious cooking. Thank you very much.
There's still some left.
I do want to tell all of you that my wife had a knee replacement operation. It has been very successful, and she's home again now. Thank you.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning. May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all, and may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared become a load lightened.
I want to lift before us a couple of things. One, the sorrow and concerns for the family of the two officers who were shot this week, and all of the struggles that we are facing as a community here in the St. Louis metro area. And this other thing I would like to lift up is that this morning, actually early this morning, Southold Unitarian Universalist Church, which is in New York, it's a congregation that actually founded the same year that this one did, 1836, and its building was built in 1860. They had an electrical fire last night, and the entire building just burnt completely to the ground. There's almost nothing left. And I also want to hold in our thoughts the couple who was living in the parsonage next to it, which was fine, but they also had a fire just a couple of weeks ago and were staying there because they had nowhere else to stay. So this is a community that's faced a lot of trial and tribulation due to fire, and we want to hold them in our thoughts, our prayers, and our meditations. And so at this time, I invite you into a time of meditation, prayer, or contemplation. This is your own personal spiritual practice. And I invite you to notice the world around you, to be here in this moment. If thoughts and worries of the week come to you, just thank them and let them flit away. I invite you to notice the feel of the pew beneath you and the air and the clothing on your skin. I invite you to notice the sounds around you. And as you come into this place of presence, I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. And in and out. Now one more time so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. We do that so that we breathe in deeper. And so I invite you to do that one more time so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. The spirit of life, that still small voice within our lives, we open ourselves to the wonderment of this day, the beauty of the sun and the fabulous weather, to the community here gathered, to all those who bless our lives with their presence, with their laughter, with their kindness, with their compassion. We are particularly grateful to those who are able to walk with us without trying to fix those things in our path. We offer gratitude for the many things that we have, even in the face of things that we may not have that we need. And the simple gratitude and blessing of being alive, even when sometimes it may be hard to remember that blessing. We open ourselves to grace and wonderment as we hurtle through the universe on this small planet at speeds beyond our imagining, in space faster than we can know, and knowing that what we do not know is as vast. On this day, we offer our prayers, our blessings to those who are in times of struggle, to family members who are dying from illnesses we cannot control, for loved ones healing from sickness and injury, to those who have died, and to a world so broken and so uncertain of how to move forward. May we remember that each step that we take is one step closer to healing and wholeness, and that our presence matters. We offer special blessings to the church in New York. May they find a way forward, particularly as some will have arrived to attend service to find a burned building. May they know that they are not alone. And for our city that is healing from hundreds of years of moral injury, May we find a way forward in compassion and patience and presence. I invite you now into a time of silent meditation, prayer, or contemplation. As we come back into this space, I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in. And now. And in. And out. And one more time so your neighbor can hear you. In. And out. Blessed be in on.
Receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does the money you give reflect what you receive? As you give to our plate this morning, you are invited to consider how your spiritual life, the life of meaning and value and purpose, are enhanced through your giving. This morning's offering will be greatly received. May it be joyfully given. Thank you.
could join me in reciting our offertory blessing, which will show up in a minute. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. As Unitarian Universalists, we draw our wisdom from many different sources. And today, we explore the question, why did the chicken cross the road?
From the Taoist sage Lao Tzu, the road can be crossed is not the true road.
And from the Buddha, if you ask this question, you deny your own chicken nature.
And from Star Trek Captain Kirk, to boldly go where no chicken has gone before.
And from John Lennon, imagine all world's chickens crossing roads in peace.
From Dr. Seuss, did the chicken cross the road? Did she cross it with a toad? Yes, the chicken crossed the road, but why it crossed, I've not been told.
And from Martin Luther King Jr., I have a dream that one day all of God's chickens, chickens of every color and faith from every village and every hamlet, will be free, thank God Almighty, free at last to cross the road without their motives being called into question.
And from Thomas Jefferson, all hens are endowed by nature and nature's God with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of the other side.
There endeth our source readings. So one Sunday morning, the minister noticed that a little boy was standing and staring up at a large plaque that hung on the wall. And at the back of the sanctuary, the young man of 7 years old or so had been staring at it for some time. And so the minister walked up and stood quietly beside him. Gazing at the plaque too, she said quietly, "Good morning, Billy." "Good morning, minister," replied the boy, not taking his eyes off the plaque. "Minister, what is this?" "Well, these are the names of all the people who died in the service," replied the minister. Soberly, they stood together, staring up the large plaque full of names, and little Billy's voice barely broke the silence when he asked quietly, "Which service, the 9 or the 11?"
From Appalachian Humor by Loyal Jones. A missionary came into the mountains to see how many people he could save for the Lord, and from a way of life that he had read about in novels. He spied an old man sitting in his front porch enjoying the afternoon sun. He went up to the man's yard and without saying as much as a howdy, said, "Brother, are you saved?" "Why, no," said the man. "I've been living here for 40 years. "I mean, have you found Jesus?" asked the missionary. "Now, I didn't know he was lost. The Bible says he's in heaven until he comes again. What I mean is, are you a member of a Christian band?" "No, but there's a Jed Christian who lives about 5 miles over the ridge. My question is, are you ready for the judgment day?" "When is it?" "It may be next week, it may be next year. We don't just know." "Well, when you find out, you let me know. My old woman may want to go both days."
How many Unitarian Universalists does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Thank you. How many Unitarian Universalists does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
None. You just think the light bulb should change by itself.
There were two evil brothers. They were rich and used their money to keep their ways from the public eye. They even attended the same church and looked to be perfect citizens. Then their pastor retired and a new one was hired. Not only could she see right through the brothers' deception, but she also spoke well and true, and the congregation started to swell in numbers. Soon, a fundraising campaign was started to build a new assembly hall. All of a sudden, one of the brothers died. The remaining brother sought out the new pastor the day before the funeral and handed her a check for the amount needed to finish paying for the new building. "I have one condition," he said. "At his funeral, you must say my brother was a saint." The pastor gave her word and deposited the check. The next day at the funeral, the pastor did not hold back. "He was an evil man," she said. "He cheated on his wife and abused his family." After going on in this vein for a small time, she concluded with, "But compared to his brother, he was a saint."
A woman invited some people to dinner, and at the table, she turned to her 6-year-old daughter and said, "Would you like to say the blessing?" "I don't know what to say," the little girl replied. "Well, just say what you hear your mommy say," the woman said. It's never a good thing to say. The daughter bowed her head and said, "Dear Lord, why on earth did I invite all these people to dinner?"
A mother was teaching her 3-year-old son the Lord's Prayer. For several evenings at bedtime, the little boy repeated it after his mother. One night, he announced that he was ready to go solo. The mother listened with pride as her son carefully enunciated each word right up to the end. "And lead us not into temptation," he prayed, "but deliver us some email. Amen."
How many UUs does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
We choose not to make a statement either in favor or against the need for a light bulb. However, if you, in your own journey, have found that a light bulb works for you, that is fine. You are invited to write a poem or compose a modern dance about your light bulb.
Did you hear about the latest UU miracle?
No.
Someone saw the face of Ralph Waldo Emerson on a block of tofu.
Oh, for fun. It's good to laugh at ourselves now and then, right? I was looking into different people and what they were saying about humor and the importance of humor, and my favorite was Reverend Howard Thurman. And he said that, you know, so often we take life so seriously, and we see humor as something that can be inappropriate or irreverent. And we got to be careful because the humor that we use can sometimes be self-devaluing, where it can make fun of others. But humor at its best, when it's done well, helps us go deeper into the work that we do. One of the things I loved about our covenant workshop yesterday is that with all the seriousness and debating back and forth and all the conversations, there was laughter all day. There was laughter all day. We broke into small groups, and I'm sitting in my office, and every once in a while I'd hear a roar of laughter, which, you know, when you're talking about the relationship between the board and the members, you know, either that's a good or a bad thing, but it was nice to hear laughter, right? It's an important part of our lives and our work. As a Unitarian Universalist starting off in professional work, I was a religious educator for a few years, and one of my responsibilities is work with the coming of age group, which is 8th graders who are getting ready to make a commitment and think about what they believe and all of that. And every year, at the end of the year, we would do a camping trip between the middle schoolers and the coming of agers, because we wanted to make sure that there was relationships built across. We also did one with coming of age in high school and that. Well, somehow, in the course of this trip, I got landed with 2 middle schoolers I didn't know, because I wasn't responsible for the middle school program. And we get into the car, and we have an hour and a half drive ahead of us, and I know it's a bad sign when the kid in the front seat immediately puts on his headphones. I think, this is going to be a long trip. Right? You know. And the other kid in the back, who's one of my favorite queer young adults ever now, but was, you know, kind of a troublemaker, but he didn't know me, and he wasn't sure what was going on, and the other kid had put his headphones in, and so he just kind of sat back there and read his book. And at some point I go, "Friffle! Kermupolo! What?" The kid in the back, what are you saying?" You know, and I just started inventing silly words. Now, I have many of you have heard me say silly words in response to things. I say friffle nerf quite frequently. And so I just took this advantage of this tendency to invent words to try and get their curiosity, because I knew that particularly with middle schoolers, if you act silly, if you're willing to make an ass of yourself so that as an adult, they're willing to listen to you. It's a pretty miraculous thing. And so I just started saying silly words. I'm like, no, that doesn't sound good. I'm like, hey, can you write this word down? And so the kid in the front seat is now writing down words, and next thing you know, they're helping me make words. And by the end of the drive, we have a whole new language that really only the three of us could speak. But the thing that I note is that the humor is what broke the ice. I could have just been the serious adult driving the car and ignoring them too. I could have said, hey, take the headphones out of your ears. That's not cool or polite or whatever, but that would have just ended the conversation. In that moment, the thing that created conversation between total strangers and ultimately of friendships once they became adults was humor, was laughter, was silliness. Silliness can feed our souls. It can guide us in our relationships. It can give us connection and hope. Any Eddie Izzard fans in the house? Yeah. Eddie Izzard's one of my favorite. I struggle with comedians because so often they make fun of a people as a way to do their humor. And I'm not so comfortable with that. One of the things I like about Eddie, one, he's a transvestite. When he's a transgender person, I'm good with anybody who's a transgender leader in the world. You know, and he walks in heels 10 times better than I ever could. And he looks great in a dress. So, you know, he's doing his show, and he likes to make fun of religion. You know, in England, religion's this thing. And so he says, you know, the Church of England, you can't take things seriously in the Church of England. You know, the Inquisition would never have worked. You know, they put somebody on the rack and start tightening. They're like, it hurts. Oh, loosen it up a bit. You know, we don't want to hurt him, you know. Can't take strong stances in the Church of England. It's not like we say you have to have cake or with a vicar or you die. And then cake or death, right? And so he's like, you know, acting like the minister. Would you like cake or death? Cake, please. Okay, piece of cake for you. Next person, cake or death? Cake for me too, please. He's like, well, we better not have too many more people. We're going to run out of cake. Wasn't expecting such a rush. Next person's like, cake or death? Death. Oh, I mean, cake, please. Ah, you said death, you know. So he's doing this whole skit, right? Making fun of religion, but at the same time, connecting people to kind of a sense of silliness and wonderment. And being honest about the Anglican Church, which, by the way, yeah, is very much like, you know, can't sing, we're hanging out together kind of stuff. And just being honest about the world and having difficult conversations. Silliness helps us connect in ways that we can't imagine, but it also makes the work that we do easier. Any of you take yourselves too seriously? I definitely have my days. Anybody not take yourself seriously enough? I definitely have my days, you know. But one of my comments is I like to say, there's too much that needs to be taken seriously. I refuse to be serious when I don't have to be. Humor can be a spiritual practice that helps you connect with the lighted heart part of yourself. It's a stress reliever. People who laugh have fewer heart attacks. They let go of stress. They live into the world. And it also helps us have those difficult conversations that we may not be always able to have. And so when I go back to that Howard Thurman and thinking about the important spiritual aspect of humor as a way to do the hard work, to have the difficult conversations. I think it's amazing that Larry Wilmore's show is coming out right at a time when we're having these difficult conversations about race. And so he can have these comedic conversations in a way that become relatable and can help us move to a different place of understanding and hope. And we need more of that. We need more creative humor, more silliness in our lives. Because the minute we start taking ourselves a little too seriously, things tend to fall apart, and we tend to have a harder time hearing each other. So I advocate humor. I advocate humor that is kind and compassionate. And I say, let us be silly together. So I'm going to invite you into what I call a laughing meditation. Some of you will remember we did this not long after I first got here. And one of the things that I know about laughter is that it's contagious. And you may be like, I don't want to laugh, Sunshine. What are you talking about? And you may even be totally resistant. I just ask that you go with it. And so I just want you to say, ha.
Ha.
Ha, ha, ha. And keep going. And stand up as your body's spirits allow. Some people just jump right in. Well done. All right, I want you to laugh at the top of your lungs. Keep going. I'll tell you when to stop. Keep going. It's really spectacular. All right, now stop. Ah. Please be seated. It's my favorite part when you ask people to stop and they can't, like, yay. And so, the last laugh.
On board the starship Uniprise, while traveling by Earth, the crew responds to a distress call from a lost UU Association outpost. Captain Kirk asks, Mr. Spock, what can you tell me about these people? Spock replies, the library computer has little information, Captain. Logically, however, we may deduce from their name, Unitarian Universalist, that since Unitarian means one, and Universalist means everything, that these people believe in one of everything.
Not far from the truth. We do not, however, believe in everything. All right, Jesus and Satan have an argument as to who is the better computer programmer. This goes on for a few hours until they agree to hold a contest with God as the judge. They set themselves before their computers and they begin, and they are typing furiously, lines of code streaming up the screen for several hours straight. Seconds before the end of the competition, a bolt of lightning strikes, taking out the electricity. And moments later, the power is restored. And God announces that the contest is over. He asks Satan to show what he has come up with, and Satan is visibly upset and cries, I have nothing. I lost it all when the power went out. How many of you have been there? Very well, says God. Let us see if Jesus fared any better. Jesus enters a command, and the screen comes to life in a vivid display. The voices of an angelic choir pour forth from the speakers. And Satan is astonished. He exclaims, but how? I lost everything, yet Jesus' program is intact. How did he do it? And God chuckles, everybody knows.
Jesus saves.
For the members of any religion, to have a few doubts is normal. To have many doubts is a crisis of faith. To have constant doubts is to be a Unitarian Universalist.
Little Sammy was studying for his bar mitzvah, and one day his mother asked what he had learned in Hebrew school. Well, Mama, said Sammy, the rabbi told us how God sent Moses behind enemy lines on a rescue mission to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And when they got to the Red Sea, he had his engineers build a pontoon bridge, and all the Jews walked across safely. And then the Egyptians followed, and Moses used his walkie-talkie to radio headquarters for air cover. And they sent bombers to blow up the bridge and drown all the Egyptians, and the Israelites were saved. Now, Sammy, is that what the rabbi really taught you? His mother asks. Well, no, Mommy, but if I told you what the rabbi did say, you'd never believe it.
In Of Human Bondage, Somerset Maugham said, a Unitarian very earnestly disbelieves almost everything that anybody else believes. And he has a very lively, sustaining faith, and he doesn't quite know what.
That's an actual quote. That's the really best part of that. Three children were talking about their religions. "I'm a Catholic," said one, "and our symbol is the cross." "I'm Jewish," said the second, "and our symbol is the Star of David." The third child said, "I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and our symbol is a candle in a cocktail glass." Apparently that resonated.
Apparently that was a good one. From The Simpsons, Bart is playing Billy Graham's Bible Busters, in which you zap people and convert them to Christianity. Bart is really getting into the game, and after zapping a guy, he exclaims, "All right, I got him." Ned Flanders' boy replied, "No, you just winged him. Now he's a Unitarian."
What is a Unitarian Universalist?
What is a Unitarian Universalist?
Someone who believes in life before death. Also true. What is a Unitarian Universalist?
What is a Unitarian Universalist?
Someone who approaches every question with an open mouth.
How many Unitarians does it take to replace a light bulb?
Many Unitarians.
None. You can't replace light bulbs with Unitarians. They complain too much when you try to screw them in.
Why are Unitarian Universalists the worst hymn singers? Because they always read ahead to see if they agree with the next line. And so with that, I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow, and join in singing, "Coffee, coffee, coffee." Service begins.